Hey Ray Fam, thank you for being part of our incredible community. Your support has made the Reg C Show a hub for amazing stories, thought-provoking conversations, and unforgettable moments. We've embarked on a mission to bring you the most extraordinary guests, individuals with unique perspectives and stories that inspire. And here's where you come in. We're aiming to take our podcast to new heights and we want you to be a part of that journey. Imagine this. By subscribing to The Reg Z Show, you're not just staying updated on the latest episodes, you're actively contributing to the growth of our community and helping us attract even more amazing guests onto the show. So, if you haven't already, hit that subscribe button right now. It's a small action with a huge impact. Subscribing not only shows your support for the podcast, but it also sends a powerful message to potential guests that our community is passionate, engaged, and hungry for the kind of content that sparks curiosity and fuels inspiration. And if you have already subscribed, fantastic! Share the love by telling your friends, family, and colleagues about The Reg C Show. Together, we can build a community that celebrates diverse voices and extraordinary stories. Well, thank you for being a part of this journey. Your support means the world to us. So hit that subscribe button, join our growing community, and let's continue unlocking extraordinary stories together on The Reg C Show. As we all know, becoming a truly great leader is not an overnight transformation. It's a journey that requires dedication, perseverance, and continuous growth. Just as Rome wasn't built in a day, neither is exceptional leadership. Now, how many of you would like to be a great leader? If you want to, then sit tight as we bring you through this transformation journey with our special guest today. In this episode, we've invited a leadership coach and trusted advisor. Her name is none other than Heather Penny. Dr. Heather Penny is a professional coach, trusted advisor, and engaging speaker. She encourages individuals to step into their best life as they recognize the unique strengths they have to offer. Heather draws out fresh ideas and actionable goals to focus on forward momentum. She holds a PhD in human services, with her research focusing on career fulfillment and emotional well-being for the gifted woman transitioning. She has extensive global experience in consulting and holds an MA in educational leadership. And as a professional coach, Heather is known for her specialty focus on a woman's journey and serves her clients by drawing out their natural strengths and motivated direction. Not just that, she's also an author of her latest book, Grace Space, Creating Spaces We Want to Live and Lead In, which is a phenomenon that talks a lot about leadership, which we are going to talk a lot about it in this episode. Well, without further ado, let's welcome Heather into the podcast. Woo-hoo!
Hello, good to be here. Rayson, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're most welcome. It's really my honor to have you here, and I would like to thank Nick from Book Thinkers for introducing both of us in this amazing short period of time to actually get to know you and also at the same time get to interview you about your extraordinary book, and also congratulations on your new book.
Thank you. I'm so excited about it.
Yeah, I know, right? So how have you been?
I've been so great. Very busy. Just launched this fourth book in January and we're now in February and I'm already having lots of conversations around it. So just excited to be talking about it today.
Nice. Well, you know, when I was listening to the audiobook of this, I was like, wow, this is really practical. And also at the same time, I feel that, you know, all of you while tuning in, you can actually go to Amazon to buy this amazing book because it teaches you a lot about not just the basics of leadership, but also the soft skills that you need in order to become an extraordinary leader. All right. And
yeah,
you know, I truly believe, right, a lot of my followers do not know much about you. So Heather, do you mind if you share with the audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, of course. So I started out in the field of education, worked in that for several years, if not decades. And I started with little third graders, teaching them reading, writing, and arithmetic way back in my earlier years. And that's where I got my start of really understanding human growth and development. After teaching little kids, I moved up into university work, teaching adult learners, getting my master's in leadership. And that's when I really began to love this idea that we can all learn and grow and transform. Then I went through my own kind of identity crisis myself in my midlife, where I realized I don't think I want to keep teaching. What I realized is I wanted to teach what I wanted to teach on. So once I understood that, I started moving into coaching, and I became a coach and opened my own coaching company. And that was about 13, 14 years ago. And I have just been loving my work. I work with leaders from around the world, private. I also work with organizations and individuals and groups and conferences. And I get to do all sorts of things. And to your point, I really focus on the soft skills. More importantly, what I call 3C living and leading, which is clarity, confidence, and courage. And I believe every one of us holds it within us. It's just how we need to access it and pull it out so that we can live and lead in our spaces better.
Okay, nice. Wow. I can tell you have a huge range of, I would say, experiences guiding people, especially, you know, kids, and then after that, yeah, adults with leadership skills and many other things that you talk about on how to live their life fully, in a sense. And I believe, right, you know, it is so important to actually get to know you more. So I would like to actually get to know you about your childhood backstory. Can you share with us, like, how it's like, and was leadership something that you already have back in the days, or do you not have it, and it's a thing that you realize that you need to grow? It's like, yes, a muscle, yeah, that you need to grow when you were younger.
Oh yeah, great question. You know, it was back in my childhood years, nobody knows who they are, right, as a kid. But as you start moving through, right, school and all the different age levels, I began to realize that I really did have this desire to lead people. And what I began to understand as I got older is it's not about having power and authority. It's about serving humanity. How do we get the best out of our group time together? How do we come to consensus? How do we communicate well? How do we make sure every member feels valued? This is what I was beginning to understand leadership was, and I loved it. I learned it a lot, honestly, through sports. And when I became the softball pitcher of my team and a captain way back in my high school years, oh, nice, I realized I kind of got the bug for leadership and being able to take care of the people that I was responsible for. That's what I began to understand leadership was. And so when I was the captain of my softball team, it was my job to take care of all 9 players out there and make sure that we were all working together as a team and making sure that nobody felt left out. That's how I viewed leadership. And that was from a young age. And of course, as I grew and as I aged, I remember thinking, if I'm ever in a position of influence or a position of authority, I want people to feel better than when they were before they crossed my path. My hope is that when I move into leadership, people feel like I can do more. I have more clarity, more confidence, and more courage, but I can reach and access potential because I have a leader like Heather who believes in me and gives me opportunity and isn't threatened by my skill set, even if their skill set is even better than mine. I want to see people under my leadership really thrive and not just survive or not just endure. So I take it very seriously. I don't take myself very seriously, but I take my work seriously. And I want to make sure that people feel like they get to be their best self and they get to reach potential and hopefully even sometimes access potential they never even knew they had. And that started way back in my younger years. And I can remember probably my first earlier stages was on the softball field and encouraging, whether it was my third baseman or whether it was my first baseman or my left fielder, I wanted everyone to feel like they were a valued member of that team and that they were in the right spot. And if they weren't, I wanted to do something about it to see if I could influence and move them around the field. So I got that center spot as the pitcher. So I got to view everything from the mound, but I also got to be the captain my last 2 years. And that's when I realized how much I loved being in a position to make sure that not only was the team working well together, but the individual was feeling valued on the team. That really excited me. And I think that's what the essence of true leadership is.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, like, in order to be a great leader, you have to care for your people rather than, you know, caring about just yourself and you want to win. And, you know, the trophies don't mean anything unless if the teamwork is strong, the bond is strong, and you guys have a common goal towards that direction that you want to go to in terms of success and whatever not, right?
Yes, yeah. And to be able to, like you said, a common goal, and we ended up really hitting some significant championships. That's when I realized the power of just collective teamwork, collective clarity, collective energy. It's so much more fun doing it with a team than doing it with yourself. And I think that's the essence of leadership.
Yep, I agree. I agree. And just wondering, how did you actually get interested in leadership coaching then? Because I believe it's something that is different from, you know, being a softball team leader as compared to, you know, coaching other people to become a great leader, or teaching or guiding leaders to be an exceptional leader.
Yeah. Well, first I had to get experience more in the field. So as an educator, I learned a ton about how people learn and grow. That was very important to me. And the other thing I learned is, you know, I hired my own coach, so I wanted to experience it myself. I don't do it unless I experience it myself. I believe that's authentic leadership. So when I began to really work on myself and offer that experience to myself, that's what gave me that next level to say, I want to step into the space and meet people where they're at. And it's typically wherever they're transitioning, they're changing, they're growing, they're at a crossroad in their life. They don't know whether to go left or right or forward or backward. And I know what that feels like. And then I also know what it feels like to grapple with it at the crossroads, but then also to experiment with choosing a way to go. And sometimes we choose the wrong way and we need to U-turn and come back. Sometimes we choose the right way and we're thrilled. I mean, that's how life is. But I believe it goes so much better when we have someone in our corner believing in us, taking the journey with us, and even just slowing down long enough to help us reflect and ask the questions and serve as a sounding board. So I think that's what leadership looks like behind the scenes. You're helping your people really understand what they need to learn and grow. And then you're also not afraid of being out front, being the first one to go if you need to, being the first one to model something, being the first one to stand up and say, I believe in this group, this team, this mission. These are all things you're constantly trying to hold as a leader, the individual journey and the group journey, and then the personal journey. We've got to be authentic leaders so that we don't burn out, but more importantly, so that we're not fake. I want us to be real as leaders. So I always tell leaders, especially people who want to be leadership coaches, I go hire your own coach first. Doesn't matter how much work you do. Doesn't matter how much book learning you have, how much academic learning you have. And that's someone who has a lot of academic learning. It's when you spend time in the field that actually doing it yourself that you go to that next level and you can meet your clients better where they're at. And I can tell you, there's every client, I've worked with thousands of clients now, there's not one that I don't remember thinking, oh, I know what you're talking about. I know what they're talking about. I understand the fear of not knowing which way to go. I understand the fear of should they move forward? Should they stay put? Should they take this job? Should they marry this person? Should they write this book, start this business? I know what that feels like because I had to go through all that myself and I had to grapple with all the false beliefs around there and then how I needed to move it into some true beliefs so that I can change my mindset. So that's what I really get excited about, is helping people identify their mindset that will help them move forward and really go after the life that they're made for.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I truly believe that every time it starts off with your mindset. When you want to be a leader, when you want to do something, everything has to start from the mindset first. Correct me if I'm right.
You're right on. Yeah, that's where you get the clarity. You got to get clarity in what you're thinking about. The confidence is what you're believing, and the courage is how you take action.
Yep, I agree with you. And also at the same time, you know, as somebody who is academically strong, I'm pretty sure you have read dozens of books, thousands of books, in fact.
Yes. Yes.
Right. So can you share with us like what are 1 to 3 leadership books that have greatly influenced your life?
Oh, yes. I'd love to. I'd love to give a shout out to Brené Brown, Rising Strong. Mm. She really hit a home run with that one. I use it a lot in my coaching because she captured 3 areas, the reckoning, the rumble, and the revolution. And she's saying, you got to have this reckoning and understanding what you're facing to be honest about it. You got to be able to rumble with it and fight with it. And then that's when you hit the revolution. So Brené Brown, Rising Strong, I've loved her work. I love Mark Brackett's work around emotional intelligence. He's doing a phenomenal job. And he's a little more new on the scene, but man, I highly recommend everyone reading his stuff. I think it's his latest book is Permission to Feel. Love the work he's doing. Mark Brackett, highly recommend him. And let's see who else. Oh, I love Kim Blanchard. He's just doing great work on servant leadership. And he actually wrote, he endorsed my book, and I put him on the cover because I like him so much. So he's quoted right on the cover of my book and talks a lot about servant leadership, and he's really modeled that for our world. And he's been around for decades. And I love the people that aren't like the flash in the pan, but I like watching how long have they been around? And he's been around for years and years, and his message is very consistent, and he's very generous with supporting people, including myself, who's a little newer on the scene than he is, but just a great guy and models how to serve people. And I can't speak highly enough about these 3 people.
Awesome. Wow, I love the recommendations that you have. And of course, I did actually notice that Ken was the one who actually wrote something for you, like a testament for you.
Yes.
About your book. Yeah,
yeah, wow, he endorsed it. Amazing. Yeah, I felt very lucky to have him.
Yeah, it's really amazing to have people of such stature, legends in this field, to actually, you know, give you recommendation to actually endorse your book, which is really amazing. And for those of you who are, you know, tuning in to this episode, you guys can actually go to Amazon to check out Gray Space. It's really a phenomenal leadership book, which I listened to it and I really enjoyed it. And yeah.
Thanks, Rayson. And
you're most welcome. And, you know, as we all know about your success, right? We know that, you actually have won championships. You have actually done a lot of things to help your clients to grow as a leader, as a person. And before all this success happened, I'm pretty sure there were bound to be mistakes and failures.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So, Heather, can you share with us, like, do you have a favorite failure of yours? And how has that failure or apparent failure set you up for later success?
Yeah, failures are never fun to go through during the moment. So I think I'll always just say that. I'm like, I don't know if I have any favorite failures at all, right? But it's the lesson that you learned after the failure that you really are grateful for. And I would say probably about 10 years ago, I started a company and I had 3 different business partners. And I love these business partners. But what I realized is I could not do a company with that many business partners. And I couldn't be creative. I couldn't do my work. And so that was a company I had to shut down. I think you feel like a failure in the moment. Later on, you realize it wasn't a failure. It was an important lesson that got me to where I am today. So I think that's where I like to distinguish failures. If anyone's going through a failure, I want to say I have so much empathy for you. I could feel, you know, the shame, the humiliation, the disappointment, all the emotions that go along with that, loss of revenue, just all these things. But I think later on down the road, I have such a gratefulness for that life lesson. Another failure was a coffee shop. You know, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, so I bought a coffee shop. My goodness, that the recession hit. I'm out of California. California's not good to small business owners. And so I would say I saw exactly what was trending. It was losing money. I didn't have the time to put into it. I didn't want to manage a staff. And here's what I learned. It was a painful lesson.
Right.
We were able to flip the business and sell it, fortunately. But here's what I learned. I never want to work with food. I never want to manage a staff. Here I'm a leadership coach, but golly, I got to know my limits here. And I didn't want to work with a site. That was so important for me. It's almost like if I didn't get to try that on for size, I wouldn't have known how to really create my coaching company today. So the coaching company I have today, I have no business partners. I work better on my own. I hire lots of different people to be on my team, but I don't bring on business partners. I have no venue that I have to manage. I have no employees that I have, no big teams of employees. I just work with independent contractors, and I do no food, which is perishable. It's all services that I offer. So you can see those were all important failures for me as an entrepreneur. And here's where I guess where I want to encourage anyone who's listening. Yes, it feels bad in the moment, but it's helping you learn the type. If you're interested in being an entrepreneur, don't give up. It's helping you understand the business that eventually you want to form later on in life. When you walk away from some of these fails, ask yourself why it failed, but ask yourself what you loved. I still loved being my own boss. I loved the creative side of it. I loved helping people. These were all things that I loved. I loved creating my own schedule. These were all things I still loved as an entrepreneur. And I loved the ability to be able to influence how a business was being grown. These were all things I loved. I just didn't love these other things. So if you can, once you get past the emotions of the failure, if you can separate out what you loved and what you didn't love, it's so important for eventually creating the company and the entrepreneur work that you want to do.
Right. So you're saying that, you know, when you want to start your own business, you can't just jump into any. You got to figure out what you really love to do and what doesn't suit you, in a sense, doesn't suit you in terms of your characteristics, in terms of your liking and all this other stuff. Correct me if I'm wrong.
You're right on. And you don't know it unless you try it. So I guess I would say, and I think that's a big fear of people. They don't want to fail. And I want to say, if you don't fail, you won't ever get to that next level. It's the failure that comes from taking risks that teach you the lessons you need to learn in order to level up and create the next level that you want in your life.
Right. I agree. I mean, this applies to not just business, but also applies to relationship and many other things, and many facades in life, ideally. I mean, if you don't really fail, then you wouldn't know what you want, or you wouldn't know how to ensure that you don't fail in the same manner again. You might fail in the next one, but you won't fail the same way as before.
Exactly right. And that's why I want to encourage people. You know, I think some of the things we do is we go through one fail and we get scared and we don't risk again. We run back to safety. I want to encourage people. It's okay. And you know what? It's okay if you go back to safety for a little bit, but don't let yourself not do what you want to really do just because of one fail. And I talk about this in my first book, The Life You're Made For. I mean, as a pitcher, you heard me mention about a softball pitcher. I threw one over the backstop in my first year pitching. If I had not, you know, and I couldn't even get it down the pipe, I couldn't get it down and create a strike, but I threw it all the way over the backstop. The humiliation of that, the embarrassment of that, but I'm so glad I didn't stop. That was my freshman year. Had I stopped in my first year of doing that, I would have never gotten to experience the championships that we got later on and be the captain of the team. That's something I learned, a lesson in my early, early years of hang in there, keep doing it. Don't let the failures stop you. Don't let the humiliation of failure stop you, because failures can be very, not only disappointing, but it can be kind of embarrassing.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, the failures can be something that is very scary and also embarrassing, especially for entrepreneurs who want to prove to the world, or even want to prove to themselves or even their family members that, hey, I can do it. But when their parents or their friends, their buddies said, no, your business is going to fail. You can't make it for the next 6 months. And when you try to push it and then you can't make it. And then, man, it is so, so embarrassing, especially when it didn't turn out the way you want it to be.
Exactly. And I think if you talk to any successful person, they have these fails in their background. That's why I'm glad you asked me it, because I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't just get here today as a successful coaching company working with great clients around the world. this was the path. I had to go through lots of different fails. I had to go through lots of different U-turns. I had to take different oopsies here and there. And but everything got me to where I needed to be today. And it taught me what I needed to do so that I knew who I wanted to be as an entrepreneur. So if there's any listeners out there and you're in the middle of a failure and you're dealing with the embarrassment of that, you know, Rayson and I are both cheering you on saying, keep going, don't give up. Right, Rayson?
Yes. Don't ever, ever give up, because when you give up, you will actually let not just other people down, but you also let yourself down.
Yep.
Because if you were to give up and, you know, do something funny to yourself, like, you know, committing suicide or whatever, that will ruin your own life and also your family members' happiness, because they will be mourning for you and all the other things as well. Right. So, yeah, I truly believe, you know, you should not do anything stupid, silly to jeopardize your next comeback, your next success. Yeah. Because I believe in the rise of the phoenix.
Oh,
even
yeah.
though this is the dragon year, but yeah.
That's all right. We'll take it.
And Heather, I just want to ask you, right? I'm pretty sure while you were building yourself up again after meeting all these failures, I'm pretty sure you have looked up to some mentors. Am I right to say that?
Yeah. I was going to mention that.
Yeah. So who are the mentors that you've actually looked up to after your failures, and what's the best piece of advice you've ever received from them?
Yeah. I would say I learned pretty quick to not listen to people that wanted to prevent me from risking. The people that said, no, you can't do that, you're going to fail. I learned pretty quick I couldn't keep them in my world and my circle, because when you're risking and you're stepping out and you're doing something, it is scary. It's vulnerable. You need wise people, but you also need encouraging people. And Brené Brown talks about this too in her book of just, you know, the applause goes to the person who dares to get in the arena. So all the people sitting around the sides of the arena, and she's talking about kind of this gladiator kind of feel, this fighter, it's the one who gets up and gets in the arena. It's not the ones who's sitting outside in the spectator seats that you want to listen to. So I always chose people that were actually doing what I wanted to be doing. And then when I would come alongside them, they would confide in me with their failures. They would confide with me how they handled them. And they would confide, they would tell me how they got back up again. So they're the ones I want to be listening to. So I remember hiring this one coach. I actually adored him, because he just kept saying, you don't have to worry about this. This isn't going to define you. He helped me put it in perspective, because when you're going through something, you think that it was going to be very successful and you're realizing it's not. It's scary. It's vulnerable. And you need voices in your life that are not saying, I told you so. You need people saying, it's okay, Heather. You can learn from this. What are you going to learn from this? What's the lessons? What's the takeaways? And it's okay. You're still admired and respected because you actually dared to try. These are the people I kept in my life, whether they were friends, whether they were coaches, consultants, people who aren't afraid of the failure and aren't afraid of the change. And they're also not going to give me false flattery. They're going to give me the truth of and help me discern where I need to move forward. So whether I hire them on my team or whether I have them in my friendship circle or whether it's someone else who was in leadership that I appreciate and respect, Ken Blanchard. I mean, I had him on my show. Whoever it is, I feel like I want to emulate. I see if I can get an appointment with them. Another one is a big endorser for my book is Bob Goff. I heard him speak and I loved what he was saying in this. And I love the work that he's doing in all his nonprofits. He doesn't just say that love is important in this world. He says love does, and started a nonprofit to help the poverty and break the cycle of poverty and support some of these third world countries. Love what he's doing. So I called him up and I said, could I talk with you? And I ended up hiring him as a coach. So these are people that I saw what they were doing in life and I saw where they're ending up. And I said, I want to go where you're going. And of course, as I spent time with these people, they weren't afraid of the fails. You know how many times these people failed and how many times they picked themselves up? Everybody wants a success, but they don't want to have to go through all the failures. And I want to say some of the most successful people I know went through massive sets of failures and lost lots of money, but they got back up, they regrouped, and they made a lot of it that, you know, they made it all back and more in the money side, or they created the business style they wanted. And they didn't see that as something to stop them.
Okay. Yeah. I totally agree with you that we got to embrace failures and not let us be so affected by it. And then, you know, it's always about how you're going to plan, strategize for the next step so that you don't get so lost about your past, and forward thinking, and just keep moving forward towards your direction, towards the goal that you want. And Heather, now to the main focus of our interview. Can you share with us the inspiration behind your book, Grace Space?
Yeah, I actually developed this idea several years ago when I was working with a company. And I remember wrapping up with some coaching calls that day. And I remember just feeling the weightiness of the conflict that was happening in the company, the kind of destructive communication that was happening. And honestly, it was just a lot. And I realized, as much as we are in these worlds and these circles, there's a term now that's being called safe space. And I like that idea of safe space, but what I'm seeing is that we need to evolve beyond just safe spaces. Safe spaces are beginning to morph into kind of these private groups where almost there is these clubs. And then if you weren't a part of this club or this tribe, you didn't belong in this world. I believe every human has value, no matter which tribe or club they belong to. And I feel like our safe spaces were morphing into that. And so I just wanted to call humanity out to, it's the goal in our life is not to try and find our safe space. The goal in our life as humans eventually really needs to be, how do I offer grace back to people and create grace spaces wherever I go? Then what I began to realize is that people don't really know how to do that. We live in a culture right now in an era in our a unique era in our world where we're reacting to a lot of what people are saying and doing. What I began to tell people is like, yes, you can react to this, but I don't know if you understand, you have another choice here. And they're like, what? It's like, you can actually respond, which is to slow it down and start really staying curious. The second practice is you can actually accuse if you want. If you want to go around accusing people, you have the right to do that, but there's actually another thing you could do. You could actually stay curious and question. So I wrote 7 practices in this book to help people understand that you juxtapose of what you can do. You have a split second. If someone's mad at you or yelling at you or destructive with you, you have a choice in that split second of whether you're going to respond or you're going to react back. And so 7 practices are really showing both sides of the coin to say which one you can do. And I'm not saying one's all good and one's all bad, but I am saying grace space is really more about questioning, staying curious versus accusing, responding versus reacting, trusting versus fear, offering freedom versus control. And so these are just part of some of the 7 practices. And I personally started practicing them myself. I thought, I want to be a better human. And I can feel that split second where I want to react to someone's accusations, but learning to even as a coach to say, well, hang on a second, can I just check that with you? Or I heard you say this, but I just have a couple questions about it. Or even if I need to, it's putting boundaries down and saying, I appreciate that you're trying to tell me something, but it's so destructive that I can't hear you. I'd love to have constructive language around this if we can do that. This is a place to be passive. It's how we assert in a way that helps humanity create more spaces of grace around us.
Oh, okay. So you're saying that the definition of grace space is more or less like not just having a safe space for the employers, the employees, but also at the same time, allowing the leaders to actually be more empathetic, to show more grace to the, I would say, to the employees themselves, or to them, or even to themselves as well, or to the peers that they're working with.
Everywhere. And most people don't realize they can hold it within them. So this idea of safe space is like you're running to a safe space to get safe. And I'm like, actually, every human has the ability to carry their own grace space around with them and cultivate it wherever you go. So whether you're a leader or an employee or a parent or you stay at home or you're working, it doesn't matter. That's why I talk about creating spaces we want to live and lead in. How we step into our world, whether we're going to work or we're going to the coffee shop or we're taking our kids to school, all of them, we have a choice if we're going to carry a grace space around with us and offering goodwill toward other people and humanity. When we are always just focused on safe space, it's like we're trying to, we live from a fear base that we've got to go run to spaces of grace or to spaces that keep us safe. And I'm like, no, you can actually be much more empowered. There's nothing to run from. If you want to carry your own space of grace around with you, you actually have, that's a really powerful stance in our world to offer back an ability for people to come together and to live in a safe space, but really to bring it to that next level that says, hey, let's all agree that we're going to question each other instead of accuse each other. Let's all agree that we're going to offer freedom versus control. We're going to trust versus fear. People are beginning to grab onto that language and recognize if it's, like I said, whether you're employee or leading or in your home or anything, we all have the choice as a human. It's our human agency that we have a choice of whether we're going to step into that or not. And I'm calling people out to recognize the power they have in their own free will and not only to join Grace's, spaces of grace, but to create them. Most people mm-hmm. like, oh, I didn't realize I could create them. I go, I know, isn't that a cool feeling? Like wherever you go, you can create that and you can carry that around with you. And frankly, people want that. So people are going to be drawn to you, whether, you know, whatever you're doing in life. And that's where I like the idea that leadership starts from within. Who we are as a leader starts from an internal journey of who we're deciding we're going to be as a human being.
Right. Well, love this. Yeah, I totally agree that if you want to be a great leader, it all starts from within. Like you need your initiatives of how you want to lead your life so that when people are learning from you, they can see you as a role model rather than, you know, you just talk the talk and not walk the talk in a sense.
Exactly.
And, you know, Heather, in chapter one, you actually spoke about the importance of leaders responding rather than reacting, mm-hmm. right? And I believe, you know, based on what we have spoken earlier as well, I was just curious, like, how can leaders actually create environments that foster this kind of grace, empathy, and understanding within their teams and organizations rather than, you know, reacting to circumstances or even what was being said by the employees or even accusing them, like what you said in chapter two on questioning and accusing, but you realize that, well, these people shouldn't be accusing all the time. And, you know, what are these ways that these leaders can actually create this kind of environments?
Yeah, I think the first thing is understanding that there's a commitment you have to make. And this grace space, like I said, I practiced it for several years on my own because I could feel I wanted to react to some people's anger toward me or any kind of maybe belittling or disrespect. Man, none of us like that. We feel that and we want to push back. You know, learning how to say, I've got a split second to handle it. Again, I'm really clear to say this is not to be a pushover, but this could probably is a very good example of it. I remember being in a conversation several months ago where this woman, I didn't know it was going to happen, but she started just really attacking me. And then she was asking me questions and then I would try and answer it and she would interrupt me. And I could feel like, what do you want to do in those situations? You want to yell louder or you want to push back harder or you want to get stronger? I could feel that I wanted to do that. And I actually was going into fight or flight. Mm-hmm. But I literally said to myself, you can react in this moment and you can feel the right to push back on this and get angry. or you can actually respond. And the way I chose in that moment to respond, and I'm so glad I did. And I don't always do this. I mean, this, like I said, I practice this too, but my emotions were very heightened because I was feeling under attack. But I turned to her and I stopped the conversation and I said, I would love to answer your questions, but I don't feel like you're hearing me. And every time I say something, you're giving me a rebuttal. And it was so powerful because that's how I chose to handle that situation. And that's what I call responding versus reacting. A reaction would have been, how dare you? I'm never going to talk to you again. And you don't have the right to talk to me this way. And blank, 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 blank. You know, that would have been an extreme reaction, right?
Right.
But to be able to say, you know what? I will have this. I will tell her exactly what I'm feeling. I'm going to respond in this moment. It's going to go 50-50, 50-50 way here. She's either going to give the opportunity to listen to what I'm feeling and course correct, or she's going to power up and then I'll say the conversation's over. But I'm giving her a shot. And more importantly, I'm giving myself a shot. So as soon as I said that and was very clear and I could feel the conversation was getting accelerated, she literally stopped and said, I'm so sorry. I really want to hear you. Can you please explain that again? And then everything just went down. I said, great. I'd love to explain it again. And we were able to talk for like another hour because her emotions were de-escalated because I called her on it. I said, I'm not getting heard here. So there's no way I'm going to stay in this conversation. Yeah. In my temptation, instead of, you know, to be able to say that instead of push back on it. We don't all do that, especially when our emotions are getting escalated and we're almost under attack or kind of, I felt ambushed. Honestly, I had no idea that this was going to be happening. So I could feel myself getting surprised in the moment too. So when I was trying to engage in the conversation, realized it wasn't getting heard, I could feel that response versus reaction choice. And I think that's what I'm telling people. And I've had a lot of feedback. People go, man, Heather, this was happening to me. And I remembered I can either question or accuse. I had someone say that to me about their teenage son. I was getting so mad at him. I started accusing him. I realized, and he was accusing me and I was accusing him. And I go, yeah, someone's got to slow the whole thing down. And she said, yeah, I totally stopped the conversation. I said, I'm so sorry. I'm starting to accuse you about things. I'm not even asking you questions. Can I back up and start asking you questions? And the whole conversation shifted away from an accusing conversation to one of questioning. Those are just some examples of how people are having, it's like I wanted to give people seven handles or seven handholds of saying, okay, when things get really tense and you're not quite sure what to do, here's some things you can do instead of accusing, instead of trying to control, instead of fearing, instead of reacting. Here's the opposite of what you can reach for.
Right. I agree. Instead of, you know, being so defensive and start to accuse other people, instead of doing all this negative behavior, we should actually practice on things like questioning, asking questions, right? Yeah. And then responding to them as well, rather than reacting to what they said, like what you mentioned earlier, like how you didn't really realize that this will affect the person's mood as well and heighten them in a way where it will make them want to accuse you even more, say more negative stuff about you even more. So that's why you have to do that. And then you also have to be receptive towards the feedback that was being given so that you can actually come up with constructive communication rather than destructive communication, right? And can you share with us, like, how can we actually turn a destructive communication to a constructive communication? And what are the, in terms of the ways that you can actually do that?
Yeah. I remember I was working with a leader fairly recently, and he said, he goes, man, Heather, I was just sitting in my office working, and all of a sudden, one of my employees comes bursting in and starts yelling at me. And I said, yeah, how'd that make you feel? And all of us, right? It would be like, what's happening here? And he could feel himself getting defensive to it. And then I said, well, what was he saying? He goes, oh my gosh, he was swearing. He was saying all this stuff. And I go, okay, destructive communication. So it was so powerful how he chose in that moment. He's just looked at the guy and he said, I want to hear you and I care, but I can't hear what the issue is through all of this kind of communication. So I'd like you to go cool off and then we can circle around in an hour. And it was so powerful because he shut down the destructive communication and also called it for what it was. He's like, this is destructive. Right. You calling names, you burst into my office, you yelling and screaming. This is not going to be constructive on any level. And then he kind of wrapped it up. It's like, I want a constructive communication with you and I want a constructive dialogue with you. And right now, this is not constructive. So the employee left and then the leader circled back around with him an hour and said, okay, do you have a chance to cool off? I really want to have a constructive conversation with you, but I don't want the name calling. I don't want the yelling. And he put the boundaries down. It was really powerful. And the guy just said, yeah, I was really hurt because this is what I thought you did. And the leader was like, no, that's not what I did. You jumped to assumptions here. And it was a massive misunderstanding because that employee chose destructive communication and the boss had the opportunity to be destructive back, which a lot of us do, right? But he stopped the conversation. He's like, no, let's have a constructive conversation, which means asking questions and checking it and helping me understand what it is you're so angry about, because I don't even understand it. I'm confused.
Right. So would you say that you got to actually let the person vent it out first, let them blast it out, and then after that, you tell them, stop. Now, what we're going to do is I want something constructive because you have been in a destruction mode. You have been like a hawk. Right. So now I want you to turn that train wreck to something different. Now then after that, that's where you actually redirect them. And then after that, you question them and to get some constructive feedback from them. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, yeah. And I would even say nobody has to endure destructive communication. And I've had people come at me and get mad at me and it's surprised me. And I think what's been really cool over the years, and I work with really strong individuals, and I really like my clients. They're wonderful people.
Right.
But what I had to do early on with some of them of just saying, I don't do destructive communication. But you know what? This is good news because I'm never going to come at you. So the reality is everybody wants us to offer this as leaders. So when they realize that, hey, Heather doesn't do destructive communication, she's not going to come in and yell at you. She's not going to start swearing at you. She's not going to slam doors. She's not going to give you nonverbal communication that is rude. She doesn't do that. That's all destructive, aggressive, or passive aggressive communication. What she does do is she's really clear and she cares and she'll slow things down to listen. Constructive communication. So the reality is all of that stopped when I put a boundary up and said, hey, I'm not doing this. And this isn't the way I communicate. And then I quickly pivoted over to, I care, and I care that you're angry. And if you can tell me why you're angry, I promise I'm going to listen to you. And if they could tell me they could in that moment, everything de-escalated. If they couldn't, they had to go cool off. I would say the majority of the time, just me stopping it, stopping the destructive communication and telling them I care, but this is not helping me understand what's going on. If you can tell me what's going on, I care and I'm going to listen. Then everything went down in the room because really the false belief that they have is that Heather doesn't care and I better come at her really hard and strong. And this is my false beliefs about her that she's just trying to control me or power up on me, whatever these beliefs that people have about leaders sometimes, right?
Right.
And everyone has some kind of authority issue at some point with somebody in their life. And so learning to say, you know who I am as a leader? I'm actually a servant leader, which means I care deeply about what you feel. And I care deeply about how you get to feel value in this role. So you don't have to fight me on any of it. That's usually what's behind destructive communication. So I would say, okay, First of all, you don't ever have to endure it. Second of all, you get to stop it immediately. But I would say then jump right in with, I care, but I can't understand this. And I really want to have a constructive conversation. That usually de-escalates it immediately.
Okay. Then would you consider somebody who doesn't want to talk? You notice this, your employee is very upset about things. Try to get some response from him or her. They just do not want to talk about it. They will just go to another place to sit down and they do not want to talk at all. So would you consider this as a destructive communication because they do not want to talk to you anything about it? Or you could see that they are upset, but they do not want to talk about certain things about the project or anything like that.
Yeah, that's passive or passive aggressive communication. So they're avoiding.
Yes.
What I like to do is let people cool off, and I'm like, and I'll give them an option. I'm like, do you want to have a constructive conversation right now? I will be happy to have that with you now. Mm-hmm. Do you need time to cool off? And then we can have it later in the day or at the end of this week, or you can reach out when you're ready. I give people options because this goes to the other practice of gray space, freedom versus control. The reason why many of us get angry is we have this fear that I'm going to try and control them. And I'm like, I don't. First of all, I can't control anybody. That's a myth. Yeah. Second of all, I don't want to control anyone. I'm truly here to help. They just have jumped to an assumption about me and an incorrect belief. And isn't our world doing that with everybody? They're not even checking how anyone's feeling about something. They're just accusing them on the way they vote or the way they think about something or the way they think about a political issue or whatever. And so what I'm trying to call people into is saying, hey, you get to slow this down and you get to find your words. And you know what? I'm going to listen. So when someone's pulling away, to me, I just have a lot of compassion, empathy for that, because I feel like they're trying to understand their words. And so I will come along and say, is there a way I can help you find your words? And what do you need in order to feel heard? These people need you to slow it way down. And if it's really hard for them to find the words, they're an internal processor. Some of them have to write. They have to write it out to find their words. So I think it's like you're holding that a compassion and empathy that people are getting overwhelmed. That's why they've checked out of the communication. So mm-hmm. you don't treat them with pressure. You treat them with, again, a freedom that says, when you're ready, I'm here to listen and I care. What do you need for me to hear, for me to hear you? What do you need? Sometimes I'll ask some of these questions and they'll be like, I need to get off site, or I need to talk with you tomorrow, or I just need a break, or I'll find a variety of reasons. Or I've even heard, I literally cannot find my words. And I go, I'm sorry, that must be really hard. I just offer empathy. We've all been in a place in our life when we're feeling something, but we don't have the language for it. We just need someone to be kind to us in that time. This goes back to gray space.
Okay. Wow. Love this concept. Love how you actually use it, because I believe I've seen many managers or leaders that don't use this kind of method. They would usually be accusing you, or they would be demanding you for an answer now rather than giving you the freedom to actually to look at your feelings and decipher how it's it and all, and then before you actually write it out or say it out to the person. So
yeah, I have an example of that with my own team. I had someone who had like multiple action steps, had 10 action steps they hadn't gotten done, and I could feel myself wanting to accuse them. Why didn't you do those action steps? But instead I reached for questioning and I said something like, hey, is there anything that we can do to help support you with getting these action steps done? I'm so glad I did that. He goes, oh, actually, I did half of them. I forgot to check them off. Can you imagine if I started accusing him of that? And you know what I mean? So it's like we're not even slowing down to check. We just think he didn't do his work. When the reality, oh, I did all this. And then he goes, and then these last five, they needed your support with this. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm the one holding up the action steps. Can you imagine again if I had started out with the accusation just because the action steps weren't done? And sometimes leaders do that. They want the results, so they just start accusing their people. How come these action steps aren't done? I'm like, well, there's usually reasons why. You know, the quick response is people think, oh, the employee's lazy. And I'm like, no, that's actually a lazy response to your employees. Your employees, there's lots of other complication things that are happening here. If you slow it down and check in with your employees, you'll find out what's going on and why they're not able to move forward in it. And sometimes they just need encouragement. Sometimes they don't know how to direction. They were scared to come to you. There's a variety of reasons of a lot of times why action steps aren't being followed through. And when a leader just keeps chalking it up to being lazy, I'm like, that's not fair to the people. And you're really, that's a lazy response on your part as a leader, not trying to understand your people.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And this is how you actually incorporate grace into leadership practices, which has, in fact, positively impacted the team morale. And not just that, the productivity and overall success for what you have in your company right now. Because if you don't you don't actually use all these things that we talked about, I'm pretty sure people will start to leave, and they won't be loyal to you and your goal and the mission of the company. I would say, gotten so much experience from you and knowledge, and then after that, when it's time for them to move on, they will move on, and they might even be your competitor instead of, you know, being a collaborator with you, which is not so nice in the end, because I've seen some of my friends who were being affected because their business partners decided to move on, and they decided to be their own boss, their own entrepreneurship journey, and it's in the same field of expertise, be it leathercraft or be it food F&B businesses, things like that, and they were so pissed and so upset that they had to go through this process. And I believe, you know, if they were to know about Gray Space earlier,
they would have
minimized this kind of things rather than allowing it to happen.
Yeah, it gives you freedom as a leader. You're right on, Grace, and I like that you brought that point up. It living with grace and giving people grace, which is the way I define it in the book, is offering goodwill, giving credit to people, you know, looking out for people. Living that way is more freeing as a leader. You're happier, you're more joyful. And like I said, the reality is you can't control people anyway. So when leaders try and control, they're just using up energy they could be using to actually empower their people, to understand their people, and even be more innovative and solution oriented.
True. And you know, nowadays we are all into diversity and even inclusion, right? So can you share with us, like, how does the concept of gray space intersect with diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts within organizations?
Yeah, if you see every human as simply being a human that needs humane treatment, it's that simple. I'm not focused on inclusion and diversity. I'm focused on every human has value. And I work with all types of people. I'm not thinking, do I have people of this certain either look or this gender or this race? I'm not thinking that way, because I see all of humanity as high value. So every human that crosses my path gets my full respect and full attention. If we're focused on that, we're not having to focus on inclusion. Inclusion needs to be focused on because people are marginalizing groups of people. So if you're living in a way that is marginalizing people and saying you don't count or you're inferior to a certain group, it's the antithesis of gray space. So if you're focused on gray space and being humane to all of humanity, you don't have to focus on inclusion and diversity. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah. Makes sense. Okay. Cool. Yeah. I agree with you on that. And, you know, I would like to ask you this. So earlier on, I actually asked you about whether leadership was a part of you, or was it something that you have to actually build it up like a muscle? So can you like tell us, like, does this apply to everyone? Like, that means everyone can actually be a leader. It's just that they need a lot of time to actually work on it to become a better leader, or it's just you are already pre-selected by your genes. Okay, you are a leader, you are a follower. Is it something like this?
Yeah, I think that would be too simple for the complexities of humanity. And honestly, I think it's disrespectful, right? But to say, oh, you're this or you're that, you're inferior, you're superior. I don't think that way at all. I think every human has the capacity to lead something. I'm a parent, and I'm telling you, I had a little 2-year-old and a little 4-year-old. I was leading those. That might have been all I was leading during a certain season of my life. But that's some of the most powerful leadership, is these little kids that are looking up to me. I was leading as an educator. I can lead when I go into my coffee shop and decide how I'm going to interface with that barista. I can lead how I walk into the grocery store. I can lead how I'm in my car, navigating my car, deciding how I'm going to treat my fellow travelers on the road. I think if every person starts recognizing they have capacity to lead in something or anything, in being a CEO of a company or leading your little kids and your family, neither one is better or worse. It's just we are all called to different forms of leadership in this world. And so I would say, yes, every human, take your place at the table and lean in to where it is that you are leading. You might even be a 15-year-old kid. Well, guess what? There's a 9-year-old kid that's watching you. You might be a 21-year-old thinking, what can I lead? And I'm like, you know what? There's a 16-year-old kid who's watching you. I mean, never underestimate what you are leading and who's watching you that is needing and craving for you to create grace space around them. And so I happen to be in my time in my life where my children are 21 and 19 and my company is thriving and I'm working with lots of individuals and leaders. So I'm in that space. There was a space when I was staying home and I had just two little kids and that was my leadership space. So I think we have this tendency to compare. Oh, I'm not leading a Fortune 500 company, or I don't have my own business, or I'm not making a certain amount of money. Therefore, I don't count as a leader. I would never, never say that. And I would never disrespect any human that way. I would say each of you are probably leading something, and I would challenge you. Take a look around you in your world and leverage what you're leading. And if it's a little kid that's watching you, you'd be great for that little kid. If it's a whole company that's watching you, you'd be great for that company. If it's a world watching you, we have a large platform, you'd be great for our world. But recognize that leadership does come with a responsibility to deal with your own junk internally first, deal with your own ego, create your own space of grace inside of you, your own pride, to make sure that you're serving humanity and not hurting humanity. That's the essence of grace space.
Okay. Well, makes sense. Makes sense. Well, I love it. I love it. I love what you have shared, the value bombs that you have dropped in this podcast. Really love it. And last but not least, I have one last question for you. Sure. Okay. And Hatter, imagine this. You suddenly lose everything, your money, your name, your reputation. So what will you do from day one to day 30 to save yourself?
Well, I take my relationships around me very seriously. I've been married for almost over 30 years. So I would look at my husband and say, hey, it's just you and me again, babe. I'd look at my sweet kids that I have beautiful relationships with. And those are the ones I would look at mostly, who they don't love me because I'm a successful coach. They love me because I'm wife, because I'm mom, because I'm Heather. They love me for my personhood. And then I would just keep looking outwards. I have other friends and other circles that love me for being Heather. Those are what I would definitely look at to say, that's where I am rich. That's where I have so much value. If I lost everything, I'd still feel very, very blessed and very wealthy because of the people in my life that I have cultivated with grace space and the way I've offered unconditional love and the way they've offered it back. That does take a commitment. Grace space is a commitment. It's a way of life. It's a way of thinking. But what I want to say is you become so wealthy in the relationships and the people around you that if I did lose everything, I'd still have the friendships and they don't care about my wealth or my success. They care about me as a person because of the authenticity that we have all committed to with grace space. So it transfers everywhere. Even if they don't use the term grace space, they offer it to me. They're not accusing me. They're not trying to control me. They're not living out of fear. They're offering me freedom and receptivity and questioning and so much trust. This is where we are rich as people. And I think that's what we've lost sight of. We keep thinking success is more money, more fame, more power. And success for me is really defined with high levels of people that live in grace space with me. That's really what I want. And it's, if you boil it down, it's loving people and letting yourself be loved well as well.
Wow. Very powerful message. I love it. I love it. Especially relationships, because I truly believe that relationships is vital for our survival and our growth. And it is just like what Jim Rohn always said, your networks equals your net worth. So I truly believe that, you know, people that are around you, that are supportive of you, that really love you for who you are, and not somebody that's jealous of you and give you wrong advices. Yeah, all this are really something that I believe, you know, it's really crucial when we are having this circle of great companions that are there to help us, to guide us when we are down and out. And well, thank you so much, Heather, for all the amazing tips that you have shared about gray space and also your book as well. So can you share with us, like, where can my audience find you on social media?
Yeah, the easiest place is my website, heatherpenny.com. And then, of course, I'm on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, LinkedIn. It's Heather Penny, PhD.
All right. Okay. So with that, I would like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in to this episode. Really appreciate you guys for your continuous support, and stay tuned for the next episode of The Regacy Show. So with that, take care and have a great week ahead. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of The Regacy Show. I hope it has enlightened you. I hope it has brought you to an epiphany where you realize that this is where you want to go and this is what you want to do. So I hope you will continue to support and also at the same time like, comment, and share this episode out to your people, to your family, your friends. And not forgetting that we have just created a Telegram group. It's called The Regacy Show Family. So you can go and check it out and let us know how you find this group is serving you. All right, so with that, I would like to thank you once again. See you and stay tuned for another episode of The Regacy Show.